Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I'm uber excited. I'm about to bring you some Canadian bacon today, okay? You know, it was Canada Day a couple of days ago. We had our 4th of July, kind of the same thing. But anyways, I'm bringing to you somebody who I think is going to be a great guest. His name is Adam Quiney, and he is a coach, an executive coach, but has had a kind of long run to get there. But anyways, man, how you doing today?
Incredible. I just finished pseudo celebrating the 4th of July.
Awesome. And how was Canada?
Mm-hmm. Canada Day was, we actually were celebrating our 150th, I don't know what it is, our anniversary, I guess,
yeah,
since we confederated. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, it was a little wild and rowdy over here.
Cool. Do you guys do fireworks and stuff like that too?
If any American is present when Canadians are doing what we call fireworks, you would laugh at us.
Gotcha.
So we do fireworks, but they are nothing compared to the shows that you guys put on.
Gotcha. So in other words, you're a little bit more conservative on the amount of money you're wasting is what you're saying.
A little apologetic. I'm so sorry for the smoke. I hope it's not too loud. You know, the Canadian way.
I love it. I love it, man. So what I like to do is to get people to know you and your origin story. And so you started off as a software engineer. How did that travel on to become an executive coach?
Wow, you cut straight to the core, my friend.
Absolutely.
So software developer, I'd been doing that for about 5 years. I shifted into the role of project manager, and I was good at what I did, and I looked to the future, sort of cast the gaze out 5 years into the future, and I saw bigger salaries, projects, budgets, teams, more responsibility. So bored by that concept. And I was bored currently too, not just with what was coming down the line 5 years from now, but in the moment I was bored. And from that boredom, I was being destructive. I would show up to work and get stoned for about 5 hours. I'd do my work for the first 3 hours. I had it all dialed in. It had all neatly been controlled and I could get everything done. And then I would just dick around for the remaining 5 hours. Yeah. And on many levels that sometimes I tell this story to people and they're like, wow, that would have been nice, but it's actually horrible. There's nothing worse than needing to be at work when there's not really much for you to do there. And also I did not feel good about what I was doing. It was not at all in line with, you know, my commitment as a man, as an employee, whatever. And so at that point, I looked to go back to school, back to academia, and started a law degree.
So Adam, how did you go from being a lawyer, which is, you know, I mean, it's a pretty decent job, to becoming an executive coach?
So now I was doing the next thing that surely this time I won't be bored. And lo and behold, I was getting good grades, good jobs, good positions. And that same boredom was creeping in, bored again, as you called it. And I also could not find any lawyers that loved what they did. I could find lawyers that could describe in very good detail, very well articulated, why they liked what they did a great deal, which is totally not the same thing as loving what you do. And so I started looking for alternative careers, other approaches or things I might do upon graduating, and kind of by happenstance met a coach. And as I talked to him, I was like, holy cow, this sounds, what you're describing kind of sounds like who I've always been for my friends and family. I can just start this right now, right? I don't need to train for this or anything. And he said, wrong. Coaching has a very low barrier to entry. It's a profession with a lot of baloney in
it.
And don't be one of those people. If you want to do this, commit to it, treat it with reverence and hold it sacred and pay for the best training you can find and hire a coach. You can't sell this if you're not buying it. It doesn't make sense. So take on those two things, Adam. And you know, there's a little more to that story, but that's kind of the short and skinny of how I made that transition from law into what I currently do.
Yeah, see, and I love that. And one of the things I could tell you that my life, my business, everything blossomed when I finally hired my first coach. And I didn't do that until I wrote my first book 4 years ago. And since then, I've gone through very specific coaches for specific things that I needed help with. And I'm a huge, huge advocate of it. And, you know, not only do I coach people on how to market, but I still have a coach today. And one of my sayings is that every doctor needs a doctor. Every mentor needs a mentor. Every coach needs a coach. You know, you've got to. I think it's really uber important. So, so one of the things we were talking about prior to us getting on the line was being the smartest person in the room. And I've always heard that saying that says if you're in, if you are the smartest person in the room, you're probably in the wrong room. But that's not always the case, especially when you're a coach, right?
Just thinking about that, I like the way you worded it. Well, here's what I'll say. So those are my people. My people I like to describe as the smartest people in the room. And so they regularly have an experience of, hey, I'm smarter than most of the people around here. Or if they're not, they know exactly who the person that is the smartest person in the room so that they can compete with them and take them down if they have to, or sort of partner with them or whatever it is. And one of the funny things about people with this makeup, I guess, this set of traits, is they often, one of the distinctions I use with them is they say, I struggle with a syndrome, Adam, that I call, I want to strangle all of the morons. And I love that. And there's something funny about that, which is that they often surround themselves with quote unquote morons. It's just, everyone is eventually a moron in some capacity or another. So these people simultaneously detest the fact that there's not enough brilliance around them and seek that situation out because it allows them to be comfortable. As long as I'm smarter than everyone else, I don't have to worry about looking stupid, and then I can just breathe and then I can just do my work. Oh my God, what a relief.
One of the things what you just basically said is these people need to learn lessons from morons. So, but you know, you know, we all want to feel like we're the smartest person in the room, you know, but, because we feel like, you know, we know everything, but the thing is not everybody knows everything. And, one of the things I always say is you know, work to your strengths, hire to your weaknesses. I mean, there are certain things that I'm really, really good at. I'm really good at accounting. I'm really good at, strategy, but I suck at writing. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. So, you know, I have to hire proofreaders and editors and stuff like that as I go along. So the question I've got for you is, you know, you're in a room, you're trying to, you know, bottom line, I mean, we all do it, you know, we're sitting here kind of, you know, we're kind of judging ourselves, judging the people. And, you know, but if you are the smartest person in the room, what's the best way to react? I personally think that if you're the smartest person in the room, you're there to serve those people. And we'll get to another question after that, which is the opposite when you're not the smartest person in the room. But what do you suggest? How do you teach your clients or people that you work with to deal with that particular situation?
Let me lay a few things out. So the trait I would say kind of captures all this is brilliance. Smartest people in the room tend to have a great deal of brilliance, which doesn't make them better than anyone. Just like having a great deal of generosity doesn't make you better than anyone. Just like having a great deal of, I don't know, spirituality doesn't make you better than anyone. These are just traits that some people have in abundance and other people have different ones in abundance. And what brilliant people tend to fear is looking stupid, because they're brilliant. And so of course we would fear, you know, not being what we are. And from that fear of looking stupid, they often do what I call, they miss the point of themselves. So they think, oh, here's what I need to do in this room. I need to let everyone know that I'm really brilliant. I need to make sure everyone's clear on that. And there's a bunch of strategies that they'll have learned to do or to apply to make that happen. Like over explain everything, kind of like I am right now, or describe things in a great deal, or perhaps condescend when someone doesn't get it, or, you know, whatever it is. And I think that perhaps one of the best things these sort of people can do, the best things you can do when you find yourself in a situation like that, is recognize that actually your real gift is drawing the brilliance out of other people. When you come into a room, you help other people actually have their brilliance shine much more greatly. Mm-hmm. And that's really the gold. No one cares about how smart you are. We care about how smart we are.
Right. Yeah. Two things that you brought up. Number one, in Canada, I don't know if you get this TV show. In America, it's called The Big Bang Theory.
Of course.
Okay, Sheldon, who you described to me was Sheldon Cooper.
Yes.
It's being a Sheldon Cooper and then realizing that you're there to be more like, you know, one of the other guys is, you know, so, but that's number one. And the second thing was that, you know, it's that servant leadership attitude, which I think is uber important. And when you walk in with that and you're really helping other people become more successful and get more out of themselves as a teacher, because I teach at community colleges, universities, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I actually learn more by teaching than I do by speaking. You know, it's like, so by helping other people, you actually learn twice. And that, I think, is one of the things that maybe those people don't recognize.
I love that. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, so let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Okay, you are not the smartest person in the room. How do you deal with a Sheldon Cooper, number one, if he's not being that kind of giving person who's trying to grow you? And, you know, do you try to work through that and stay with it because you want to learn from all these people and realizing that there is a lot to learn and gather from that? I mean, and the second piece is, you know, when's the time to get out? You know, just leave the room, go to another room.
That's a really good question, Brian. And one of the things that the smartest people in the room tend to struggle with, if you're one of these people, one of the things you probably struggle with is taking people along with you. You can see the trend before everyone else can, but that doesn't mean that everyone's just going to jump on board and agree with that. So there's kind of two places where people bump into this. The one is when they're subordinate to one of these kind of people, and the other is when they're trying to lead and develop this kind of people. I'm actually trying to think, like, what would really support me when I'm in that role where I'm just feeling frustrated that someone doesn't get it? I think that probably one of the best things would just be honestly sharing, like, hey, I recognize that you probably see something that I don't, and I'm really trying to get on board and see it. I just can't yet. And I know that I can feel that that's frustrating you. I'm trying my best. Can you explain it to me just so I can get on board with you? Because often these people get frustrated, think like, oh my God, why do I have to wade through this mud just to have people see the truth that I know is already out there? Why do I have to help them do that? And they need some support in actually understanding that just because you see some truth, that's not all there is. There's collaboration and relationship and taking people along with us. That's what really builds industry and changes the world and does all of that stuff.
All right. So I've talked with other executive coaches, and one of the things that happens is that people tend to get stuck in communication styles. And one of the things is that, you know, people say, my boss isn't listening to me. They don't hear what I'm saying. They don't understand me. And really what they need to do is understand the communication style of their CEO, CFO, COO, whatever it is, and really get to learn how they want to be communicated to, which is very similar to what I teach people in marketing. If you learn how people want to be communicated to, you're going to get heard better and you're going to be respected more. So is that something that you commonly see when people are trying to, you know, grow these relationships? You may be the smartest person in the room on the subject that they need, you know, but you need to learn how they want to be communicated to.
Yeah, there's two things I have on that. The first is one of my coaches long ago told me that the way she held it was that the responsibility for the message getting across lies entirely on the person communicating it. So it almost is irrelevant, you know, oh, that person over there is having a bad day, they're grumpy, they're just not your kind of, doesn't matter. Take away all of the excuses about the other person and just like really own, hey, my message didn't get across. Who do I need to be, or what do I need to shift, or how did I create that situation? I think there's so much power in bringing the ownership entirely over to us as a communicator. That's the first thing. The second thing is, oh boy, do I ever see a lot of that. And one of the things that you, the listener, may do if you're a really brilliant person is love to consume knowledge, to read voraciously. Oh, this CEO is not hearing me when I'm trying to communicate with them, I'll go read in a book communication styles, and I'll figure out what their communication language is, and I'll learn their love language, you know, whatever it happens to be. And the irony of that is that all of that avoids actually having a conversation with them. So I think it's important to do our research, to do our work. But I also think there's a point where we have to go and have a frank conversation with someone and say, hey, I notice that I'm not seeming to get my point across, or that when I speak or provide you something, it seems like there's this kind of reaction. What do you need me to do differently? And even putting a question like that on the table, that can transform a relationship entirely.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's very, very important, because, I mean, you know, being that smart person, and we all are. I mean, to some degree, everybody's got skills. You know, they've got something positive to offer. It's just when you start to clamp down on yourself, I think, is when the frustration happens. And that, hey, I happened to me. I worked for a corporation, and I just felt like I was in a corner because I was being sabotaged. And I broke down. I said, I can't communicate with anybody. And then I just turned into a completely different person, and, you know, backfired on me. So that's just the way of the world. So I love what you're saying. I think it makes a lot of sense. Anything else to add to that?
Well, I love what you just, that sort of arc, that trajectory you just described for yourself, where it's like, okay, I'm feeling censored or clamped down, or I can't seem to get my point across. And then it's almost like a learned help, like we learn to adapt to that, because humans were incredibly adaptive. So it's like, okay, fine, my point's not going to get across, then here's what I'm going to do. And this is in no way an indictment of you, Brian, but like, that is toxic to an organization when someone makes that decision. Ooh. Like, okay, communication cannot happen here in this organization for me. I will find some workaround. That's usually, I mean, the more that happens, this is very insidious, right?
Right. So, Adam, for my audience to get their arms around it a little bit more, you've got something to offer them. Can you tell us about that?
I do. Yeah. A lot of the work I do is in creating distinctions with people, such that you had said morons versus lessons, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole bunch. And I create a lot of infographics to sort of break this down for people, provide them an easy way to kind of consume and identify with that, and then some practices so that they can actually take that into their life and practice living from a new place. So I've got a whole bunch of graphics that I'll share with your audience. And I also have some that are more specific to, I led coach training for about 5 years. And one of the places I saw coaches really struggle was in building thriving practices. So I also have some graphics I've put together that speak to the process of creating a client, getting like the steps in creating a client, getting your client to yes, and actually honoring and holding their objection, as opposed to getting, I'd love to do this, but I can't. And okay, let's get off the phone immediately. And what to do when your client quits. So some graphics that would really support people of any service profession, I think, in those kind of areas.
Awesome. Sounds fantastic. And I can't wait to dig into those. And I'm sure my audience is going to love them. Hey, Adam, this has been a blast. You've dropped some really great knowledge bombs. I love the, you know, the metaphor story and a whole bunch of things that you brought up. And, you know, I've grabbed a couple of catchphrases out of it that I'm going to repurpose.
Take them and steal them and call them your own.
Exactly. You know, it's repurposing. Yeah. I'll give you credit when people ask. But, you know, so you've done a lot for the audience, and I really appreciate that, because that's what the show is about, is entertaining, informing, and I call it edutainment. So anyways, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do that?
We're actually in the process of rebranding right now, but until that is complete, I can be found at evergrowthcoaching.com, all one word. If anyone searches for my name, Adam Quiney, Q-U-I-N-E-Y, there's only one of us on this planet. There might be another one in England, I think, but anyhow, forget about that guy. So I'm very easy to find that way. And Facebook is always an easy medium to connect with me on, and LinkedIn if you want to be a little bit boring.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for dropping some incredible, sizzling, hot Canadian bacon on the show, man. It was a pleasure having you. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. I loved it.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.